You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Adrian Rubenstein. Adrian, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Adrian, we're talking about your show, really beautiful show at Broadway Gallery, which is up through March 16th, so those listening to it before that can still attend, hopefully. But let's jump into it. I love the title of it, which was Magic Show. Can you tell me a little bit about that title or how that relates to the work there?
So the title a little bit relates to painting and the act of painting. And then it also relates to this. I have a two-year-old, and it relates to this like idea of kind of trying to make him have a magical childhood and just like trying to make life magical, magical experiences and sights and sounds. And I don't know, that's something that just sort of plays in my head. Like it's a motivation for me. But then with the painting, it's like a magic show because, you know, I paint things in, I take them away. I feel like a magician sometimes. With all that power.
I like that. You are a magician with all that power. That's true. You know, that's so interesting and so often the case, right? Art is a little bit magic making, but it's also different having a child with that aspect of it, because then magic is something else as well. So let's talk about a few of these. There was one, I mean, I love them all, but there's one, Two Waters with Goldfish, that was really interesting to me, partly because I'm trying to understand exactly what's happening. Some of the goldfish seem to be outside the bowl or swimming between the bowls. There's something really interesting happening there that I feel not completely.
Okay. I can tell you exactly what's going on in that painting. First of all, so growing up, we had the famous Matisse goldfish painting, a poster of it hanging over our kitchen table. And I mean, it was like a poster that migrated around. It was a nice version of that poster. It migrated from my grandmother's house to our kitchen. Now it's like hanging in my mom's bathroom, I think, in Montreal. But it's the single work of art that I feel I spent the most hours looking at, like infinity, forever. So that is Matisse goldfish, part one. The other thing is a story that a close friend of mine in undergrad at art school who I still know, she also moved to New York, and she was kind of like the smartest, coolest person that I had ever met up until that point. And she told me, you know, we were like having a deep conversation, let's say we're like 20 years old. She told me that the moment she realized she was different from other people was when all the kids in class were drawing a glass of water and she drew an ellipsis at the top and all the other kids drew a straight line. It's kind of the kind of thing that's like so nothing, but it stuck with me so much, like how just like a ellipsis in a water glass, like here you have like a totally transparent object full of metaphor and symbolism and whatever, but it's just this kind of like nothing thing that you might, like, you know, a psychiatrist could use it to have you draw it and sort of see what comes out and maybe read something of it, because it's that level of automatic. And I don't know, I just thought it was so interesting that someone could think that it made them a certain kind of person because they visualized it as a different sort of drawing or spatial aspect. So then, okay, that's part two. So then that just stuck in my brain. And then later on, I became really like obsessed with monochromes for a long while, like kind of because of looking at Klaus Oldenburg's ray gun, like mold sculptures. And I guess like, I don't know, some other stuff that I took out from the library, like later on as a artist in my late 20s. And so then this idea of a painting that is just the same color in the background and the foreground, it stuck into my brain and I was obsessed with it formally. And so when I made that painting of the two vases of water with the goldfish swimming out, I literally had this idea that was transposing those three things into a painting that's blue in the interior and exterior space, or like the, you know, the negative and positive space, and like this ellipsis thing is the line, and then the Matisse goldfish, like that figurative subject matter, is like the, and they all kind of hold each other together. So that's what that painting's about.
I like that. I never would have read that, and it's so nice talking to you about that.
I'm like so excited to talk about these things. It's kind of sad. Like, it really, I love it. I love thinking
about
it.
Well, I love that too. I love that too. Because what? Why do you like to talk about them?
I think, well, it just makes me feel excited the same way that painting it does. I don't know. I kind of, like, I'm not, in a lot of ways, I feel like these are just such, like, simple, foolish, like, ridiculous thoughts and exercises, but I just think they're so cool in a certain way, you know? Like, also, like, you wouldn't ever need to know any of that to, in seeing the painting. It kind of feels like the liner notes, you know?
Yeah, well, it is like the liner notes a little bit. That's a good way of putting it. There's another one called Pink Painting, which I really like, and seems very different in terms of its composition, approach. I mean, these all have quite different approaches, it seems to me, in some respects. But Pink Painting, which is really big, is, you know, also has references in here that I imagine is as rich as what you just talked about, but not quite as easy to discern. I'd love to know more about this one.
So that painting a little bit has to do, like, last winter, another close girlfriend and I took both of our kids, who were then like 17 and 18 months, to Paris for 3 days. This is what I'm talking about, magic show. Like, just a psycho trip overseas, and we went to go see the Joan Mitchell Monet show at the Vuitton Foundation. And it flipped me out so much. I was so moved by Joan Mitchell's painting and felt just like I was looking into this sort of mirror of historical precedent that felt really relative to everything I've always loved in painting. And I was psyched about it. And then I kind of came home and started, I had done it before, like painted these sort of cutout, like cut flowers that come out of children's collage. Like this one particular collage, I guess, that I saw on the street outside an elementary school in Brooklyn. It had these like cutout tulip flowers, but I had been painting that. But then after the Mitchell show, I was thinking kind of painting water lilies, just with sort of symbolic flower shape in a field, and letting it get more abstract by having it repeat, like kind of in no particular order. Like normally a lot of my paintings are kind of like two of something, three of something, or a frame within a frame, like kind of specific. But then that painting, the pink one, has got sort of stuff all over it, like an all-over broken pattern. And the way I do it is I, like, make one painting and then kind of just do another painting over it and another painting over it. And sometimes things get covered up. Sometimes they get moved around. Or sometimes it just becomes, like, a more animated version of the very first layer. But that is kind of like it's like a water lily type of flower thing. But the flowers all have these like stems that arch over, kind of like, so it's almost like the flower shapes are drooping or something, and they're in a line. And I guess I see that as kind of like, I don't know, like a forest floor type of version of it. Like, I always thought it was really interesting how a landscaper still life, like if you just zoom in on the forest floor, then the landscape becomes a still life. Yeah. I think this is because I grew up in Canada and we like looked at the Group of Seven and Tom Thompson like way too religiously. So, yeah. Huh. Sorry if that was.
Yeah, so were there two paintings? Water lilies. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about pink painting, the pink painting. But water lilies is also a huge one, and it has those right, those flower forms that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. In pink painting, those flower forms are upside down looking, almost like I read them almost as like Pac-Man kind of characters.
Yeah, it's like they're so heavy. They're so heavy that they have to fall over like that, you know, and face down.
Hmm. I like that, yeah. And painting that large, I mean, these aren't all that large, but both of those, pink painting and water lilies, are pretty huge. And that makes sense with water lilies and that great trip you took because, I mean, those are enormous paintings. It's almost a mural, right? So in terms of,
really
of scale.
It's that's like the biggest size that I can fit into my studio because it has to go up a staircase that already has a trunk out of the ceiling that some other artists in the building took out. So I can fit that size through. I started painting that big because, for one thing, I worked in galleries forever, and as a first, like, an intern, assistant, and gallery director, ultimately, but everyone's always sort of telling you to paint big and telling you, you know, like, you have to do a big, like, strong painting so that they want to, like, kick the other guy's thing down off the wall and put yours up, you know, instead. Like, that's the goal or something, or that's
right.
Like could be the, I don't know, your, what is the inspiration? I thought I'm lost a little bit. Anyway, okay, so make the big painting. The galleries are basically huge, you know, so the walls are huge, and I think you kind of have to make big work in there to turn the space into a spectrum, you know, often. Otherwise, they take pictures of your show and it just looks like these tiny specks. But I kind of got forced into making bigger work by my art dealers at Broadway Gallery. They just, two shows ago, they sent me a couple of big canvases and they were like, just try it out. And I tried it out, and now I really like it. But it barely all fits in my studio. It's like a clown car. I had to move half of the show into the gallery storage before I could finish the other half. And it has four of those big paintings, and then another six that are pretty big but a little smaller.
Wow. That's exciting. I mean, it's also sort of working that large. I mean, to me, it's also a different scale, right? It's sort of larger than life. It's heroic in a way, right? What do you think about working that size as opposed to, you know, being kind of within the spread of your arms, right? It's literally larger than you. It's larger than a person.
It kind of flips things around on you. Like, I try to make these paintings. My whole affect of painting is, like, I'm not trying to be the teacher's pet. Like, I've never listened to anybody's instructions that anyone's ever told me what to do, really. I guess aside from making big paintings when they get the big canvases over. But I don't normally follow instructions very well. And I'm trying to make paintings that, you know, in some ways are funny and, like, taking the piss out of the seriousness of the art making endeavor, you know, like, I think that this is something that's just a real thing. Like, I think you can have a conversation about your boyfriend when you're 13, and that is just as smart of an idea as whatever's in the theory text stuff, you know, that people try to make art about. Like, I just think it's all a big open field. And that can play out well on small work that's, like, very diaristic. But once you put it on a bigger painting, it kind of warps the meaning. So I guess it like, raises the level of the challenge in some ways, you know? Like, it makes it a bigger field to play in. And it, I don't know, it changes things. You have more to work with. I think when I made small paintings, like, I did so much painting within the small frame, you know, like really each square inch like was quite labored over and many times painted over and that kind of thing. Whereas in the big paintings, they probably have a similar amount of work, but it's like stretched thinner and you can maybe see it better. And I think it becomes more abstract.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Right, I agree that it's all kind of complex in a way. There's one more work I'd love to talk a little bit about, a smaller one, also mm-hmm. quite different, called Embrace. Mm-hmm. This is a portrait, right? It looks almost like a kind of Janus portrait, or like two heads in one.
Yeah, exactly. I think I thought of that painting a little bit as like an album cover. I mean, in no particular way, but it's kind of like a line drawing. It's got lips and eyes, and I think I was thinking of a face that was head on and one that was sideways, merged. But a lot of that had to do really with an idea about color and outline again. I guess so. That painting has the same kind of outline, and it's a couple. I made it a couple years ago, so I hope I'm remembering it correctly. But I think it's blue, like almost all blue. It has like a couple of little indicators of other things other than the face.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's kind of similar to the fish bowls. I think I was like getting to the fish bowls when I painted that, but it's like outlines of people.
And one of the few that is that figurative that way.
Yeah. I mean, I drop little figurative elements. Like in this show at Broadway, there's one painting that has a figure that's upside down and floating. My kid's crying for me. One has a figure and one has just like a head that's kind of a portrait that's on a wall.
So yeah, that's really interesting to kind of mix both of them like that. A number of things happening. Like you say, there's figurative elements in other images as well. It's a beautiful show. I want to thank you for talking with me about it. I want to ask you one more question before we go a little off topic. I'm always curious, what are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading Heartbreaker by Claudia Day, D-E-Y, which was recommended to me by a friend who is a very avid reader. And it's got, honestly, such a horrible cover that I kept carrying it around with me for like a month before I finally opened it. But it's like a fantastic, I think, first novel by a Canadian writer, and it's a young female protagonist, and it seems like she's living in a cult, but it's kind of obscure. But she's like a cool, it's like a cool coming of age weirdo story where I think she maybe has to probably get out of this place. Like a sort of dystopian end of the world, but also in the current world. Teenager drama. I love it. I can't wait to get back to it.
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah, I love that book, but that sounds great. Adrian, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today. It's really been a pleasure seeing your beautiful show, and I hope everybody gets a chance to see it, or you can look more at the links here. But Adrian, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks. I really appreciate your talking to me about it.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.